We go.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Waterloo episode of A Very Local History.
The podcast where we sit and chat about a particular area of London and what we've learnt about it and its history. But just a reminder that we are not historians.
No.
We are just Ollie and Louis, your friendly podcast hosts.
Good to see you. All right, so
Waterloo. The venerable Waterloo. You were saying earlier you find it a bit grimy.
It's a crummy sort of area, isn't it?
Until you get to know a little bit more about it.
Until you scratch beneath the slightly grotty surface.
And then sanitize your hands.
Yeah.
When I say Waterloo, you say
the Battle of.
Yes, fair.
Right?
Fair. Okay. Well, immediately taking us away from London. Thanks for that.
Sorry.
Okay, fine, cool.
It's quite meta, isn't it, in its own way, because Waterloo as an area is named after a thing. So you're like, oh, I'm gonna think about that area. I'm going to think about somewhere completely different.
Yeah, that. Well, we'll get to that.
In Belgium.
Anything else? When I say Waterloo, you say?
Station.
Yeah, it's a biggie.
Yeah.
We'll be covering that.
In the way, I suppose, that sort of King's Cross is synonymous with the station and Waterloo is the same. I suppose all
Clapham
of the
Junction,
major stations,
yeah.
Houston,
Liverpool Street,
Paddington.
It's a station area, as you might well already know.
Which carries a certain vibe, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Grotty.
Yes, I suppose so.
Anything about, what about you, Ollie? If I said Waterloo, what would you think of?
Sunset.
Ah. Oh.
Yeah, that's where my head goes.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, such a famous. But we'll save too much of that.
And finally, I would say probably South Bank.
Yeah, I had that too.
I knew we had the same ones. Yeah. It's simpatico.
Well, they're the obvious ones, aren't they?
They are. They are, you know, and I'm sure everyone kind of has the same deck of cards on that front.
Yeah, the South Bank, just straight out the door and to the right.
What door?
The main entrance I was picturing.
When do you ever come out of the main entrance of Waterloo?
All the time.
What, down the stairs?
If you're going to South Bank, you go out the main entrance, right?
No, because there's like underpasses to it.
Yeah, those are grotty though. I'm going through the Triumphal Arch, mate.
Right, okay.
I'm doing it the right.
Okay, well, I'm keen to know more about it.
Let's, should we find out?
Yeah.
Should we get into it?
Mm-hmm.
So, Ollie, tell us, what's in a name?
Waterloo, what's in a name? Did you like that? Okay, so up until the 19th century, the area that we are discussing today was in fact known as Lambeth Marsh, owing to the fact that the area was...
Grotty.
Well, what were you saying grotty for? Like, predominantly marshland and lay within the ancient parish of Lambeth. And Lambeth comes from the old English word that I'm not going to pronounce.
Why not?
I can give it a go. It's like... Lambahitha.
Ah, that's quite good.
Maybe this whole process will make me learn Old English, so I just get good at this.
Yeah, I do. I think you do a good job.
You think so because you don't know Old English. You don't speak Old English. Lambahitha means, or whatever, it means the landing place for lambs.
Really?
So, yeah, so either lambs were taken, brought along the river and deposited there, or they took off from there. But actually, I think we'll go into more detail on that when we actually cover Lambeth proper.
That's fascinating.
Because Lambeth is situated to the west of Waterloo. But this area was known as Lambeth Marsh. But then, in 1815, at a place called Waterloo, which was then in the Netherlands and now I think it's in Belgium.
Yes.
In one of the most famous battles in British history, Wellington and the British defeated Napoleon and the French, resulting in the... end of Napoleon.
Yeah.
He abdicated and he was exiled.
Yeah.
For the second time.
Met his Waterloo, as the famous expression now goes.
He met his Waterloo. And then London met its Waterloo. because 2 years later, in, you know, such British fashion, on the anniversary of the battle in 1817, Wellington and the Prince Regent, who later became George IV, opened Waterloo Bridge in order to commemorate this most historic of events.
Yeah.
Down with Napoleon and, you know, all that. However, in terms of, like, the area that we know as Waterloo, it only became known as Waterloo after the station was completed. So, yeah, that's when the area was colloquially known as, we're in Waterloo.
And that was taken, I suppose, from the bridge.
Yes, well, we'll get to that, right? But certainly the station was named after the bridge. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
And it was known as Waterloo Bridge Station, right?
I don't know.
Yeah. It was originally known as Waterloo Bridge Station.
So it's all just in there. Slowly over time, they've just gone, just call it Waterloo.
Yeah. You know what? Let's just lose the bridge and the station.
And just think a lot about a battle in the Napoleonic Wars.
Yes, I think about it whenever I'm there.
Every day.
Take us on a deeper dive in your layman's history. Louis Layman's history, everyone.
Louis a layman.
Settle in. Pour yourself a drink for Louis Layman's history.
Yes, come close. The earliest evidence of habitation of the area that we have was dug up out of the silt of the Thames when they were building County Hall, which sits by the river there. And they excavated the remains of a Roman ship. Very sort of complete Roman fossil artifact.
I love it. This is great.
Yeah, which they dated to 55 BC, so pre-Jesus. And it was made of oak, and it was an evidence of the fact that this was probably a crossing point in the Roman times.
Right. English oak? I suppose we don't know, do we?
It must be.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Locally made.
Locally sourced.
By the Romans.
And that was, like I say, evidence that there was probably a crossing point there. And it could have been probably a ferry boat. There's like a romantic idea that it was a battleship sunk in the battle between these two like Roman people. And it's like, but probably it was just a ferry.
Okay.
So that's way back.
I like the romantic idea too, though.
I know you do.
Because it's like precursing Waterloo's naming.
And
it like foreshadows it. A battle happened where a place where a battle was named after thousands of years later.
Yeah, presaging. As London does.
But no, it was just a ferry.
Probably just a ferry. Sunk. After that, we hear about Lambeth, at least, in the Doomsday Book. That's right. It was listed as being in the Hundred of Brixton and the County of Surrey in the Doomsday Book. And the recorded population was around 1,800 people in 1086 when the Doomsday Book was published. So this made it actually one of the larger settlements in London at the time, which I guess, given its location near to Westminster and all the rest of it, would have made quite a lot of sense, even though it was on the South Bank.
And even though it was just marshland.
Even though it was just marshland.
So where do they live? Marshy people living in marshy land.
Marsh people. Maybe
marsh life.
Maybe they were up the road a bit, not quite in the muck and the mire.
Mm-hmm.
And then fast forward a little bit further.
Sure. Happy to.
To the mid-18th century.
Okay.
You wanted the best bits.
Yeah, no, this is good. I love it. Cutthroat history, this.
Cutthroat, yeah. And at this time...
So what you're saying is nothing happened between 80-whatever BC and 1849.
I'm sure there's a lot of lovely detailed social history that exists out there, which our listeners can go and explore.
Seriously, when I did my research as well, it basically came up with marshy area of land within the parish of Lambeth.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't notable, let's say.
So, up into the mid-18th century, where it's mostly fields, and then into the 19th century we move, where we suddenly find the arrival of... Choo-choo! I'll give you a hint.
Wow.
Guess what?
This podcast is highbrow.
What is it?
It's a train.
That's right. The railways came to town. And that saw the opening of what wasn't then known as Waterloo Station.
So I want to interject here.
Yeah.
I think before we get to the station, it's worth talking about the bridge a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
Because the bridge was obviously, as I mentioned earlier, it was opened in 1817.
And it was under construction while the Napoleonic Wars were still going
exactly,
on.
Exactly,
right?
And it was originally supposed to be called the Strand Bridge of Life.
I heard about the Strand Bridge. I didn't hear about the of life bit.
Well, Strand Bridge of Life.
Wow.
Because it just gives you life to walk across it. and there was like a whole movement. But then, as I mentioned earlier, you know, famous victory. Wellington swooped in
yeah.
on a rope. and just said,
swashbuckling,
I'm naming this after my famous victory, Waterloo, and, you know, confusion to Napoleon. And believe it or not, that original bridge built by John Rennie was an architectural delight. It was beautiful.
I've seen pictures. It was really pretty.
It really is. He designed 9 120-foot semi-elliptical arches of Cornish granite, and it won many fans. The Italian sculptor Canova called it the noblest bridge in the world.
Wow.
Said that it's worth going to England solely to see the bridge,
which is,
you know, high praise coming from Italian.
Definitely.
And yeah, he wasn't wrong. Look it up. Like, particularly look at Constable's painting of the opening. It's an amazing bridge. Or it was an amazing bridge.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw some nice pictures.
But it quite, well, not quickly, but it became not fit for purpose because it was designed for horse and cart. And then with the advent of motor transport in the 1920s, the heavy motor vehicles just meant that a rebuild was required. And after a political tug of war, Giles Gilbert Scott,
your friend and mine,
who had so many big London hits, Battersea Power Station,
Tate Modern,
Bankside Power Station, which became Tate Modern, the classic red telephone boxes.
Yep.
Building on this new bridge designed by Giles Gilbert Scott began in 1937, but by 1939, building was slow due to World War II. And most of the men working on the bridge were called up to fight. And so women became the predominant members of the construction workforce. And that's why for many years, whilst it was being built, it was known locally as the Ladies' Bridge.
That's why.
And there was a plan for a blue plaque to be put on the bridge.
Have they done that?
They haven't done it yet, I don't think.
What the heck, man? What's holding that up? Get on it, London.
Yeah, but bits of the original bridge are sort of built into the new bridge. Like, they think that the piers are faced in some of the old granite, and there's a, on the Victoria embankment, there's a sort of platform under there which is, might be the old bridge, Rennie's original bridge.
I've got an observation about Waterloo Bridge, actually.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Though I was doing the bridge, but okay.
So if you look at Waterloo Bridge's arches, I think there's two or three of them, they're quite reminiscent of another one of Gilbert Scott's famous designs. Do you know what the hell I'm on about?
I don't know.
So, you know he designed the London phone box you mentioned already?
Yeah.
If you look at the top of a London phone box, the curved roof of a London phone box,
the curvature is
very similar to the arch curve of Waterloo Bridge.
Almost as if you could fit a giant phone box like underneath into one of the arches.
Yeah, if you massive to phone box, you just slot it in, it would just be like perfect, is what I'm trying to say.
That's good.
That's not a fact. Don't anyone quote me on that.
So that's the bridge.
Okay, so let's talk about Waterloo Station. Opened in 1848 by the London and South Western Railway as part of extending that line closer into London. So the aim of the station was so that line that previously ended further out of the city could be brought closer into the centre of town, and I guess, yeah, sitting where it does now, right at the kind of apex of Westminster, and then also the City of London off to the
south central, innit?
So the original station was known as Central Station as a result.
Well, there you go.
There you go. It was reasonably sized, 6-platform, but over the course of the 19th century, booming as those railways were, they developed into a massive station of 18 platforms. But in the same way that everything was done back then, it was developed in a sort of hodgepodge ad hoc manner and was a bit of a mashup.
Okay.
By the end of the century.
It's still a bit of a mashup.
It's apparently a lot better than it was.
Really?
Yeah. Apparently it was like really grotty and, oh, there's that word again.
You don't like Waterloo, do you?
I love Waterloo. Right. I will prove it to you by the end of this podcast.
Okay.
So they basically moved to renovate it. Overhaul it completely with the sort of layout that you see today.
When was this? When did they do this?
This was 1899, I think.
So it hadn't been around for that long.
Well, what, 50 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, 50 years, about.
Yeah. I suppose so.
And in that time, because of the boom that the city and the railways had seen, yeah, it just kind of exploded as a location, destination. But they did a big rebuild, complete expansion rebuild. And so over about 20 years, it took them to renovate Waterloo and turn it into the large, open, spacious station that you see today, despite how busy it gets. I think that's the sense that it's a bit, because it's just so busy. I think it's the UK's second busiest station. As they were finishing the rebuild, London South West Railway commissioned what is now the entrance, the Triumphal Victory Arch, which depicts War and Peace and Britannia holding a torch of liberty aloft, and also lists the names of the fallen.
Yeah, so it's actually to commemorate the First World War.
It was built for that, yeah.
Not to commemorate Waterloo.
Exactly,
yeah.
Which is interesting, isn't it? You would have thought maybe that was the reason that it looked like that.
I mean, it's quite incredible.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And what's funny about it, I think, is the fact that the steps feel like they're on an angle. You know, it feels slightly wonky.
Isn't all steps on an angle, bro?
No. No, I mean like from side to side.
Oh, okay. The wrong way.
Yeah, it's okay. Do you know what I mean?
I can't say I've ever experienced that feeling of...
I always feel like I'm about to fall over on the steps of Waterloo Station.
Sort of a bit like...
But maybe that's because of what I've been up to.
Yeah, it might be because you could come from the South Bank, mate. So Waterloo Station remains largely unchanged for about 100 years. Into the 1990s, we hurtle. And at that point, they added the international platforms, which are at the far end, or right by the entrance if you're coming in the Triumphal Arch. And that became the new terminus for the Channel Tunnel between London and Paris.
I've never really thought about it before, but it's quite a brazen move from the British to say, hey, our cross-channel train, you're going to arrive into Waterloo. You may have heard of it.
Yeah, welcome, Frenchie.
It's so British, that, isn't it?
I don't think that was considered, was
oh,
it?
Oh, come on, of course, I mean, it was considered.
I'm sure they would have thought about it, but they wouldn't have done it intentionally, is what I mean. It just would have been the most sensible engineering,
sure,
I assume.
Sure.
But you're absolutely right. So it was opened in 1994. Eurostar services started coming into Waterloo. And at that time, there was quite a lot of uproar. And a French politician actually petitioned Tony Blair to try and get him to change the name of the station.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
So it's been causing, just exactly as you'd expect, a bit of consternation since, well, when it was. Obviously in 2007, a new high-speed line was built, which then moved that to King's Cross.
Yeah.
So no more does Waterloo receive our French cousins. And this St. Pancras terminus is way, way nicer.
It's like an airport.
It's sick. So I think we can all agree, too bad Waterloo.
Yeah, but there's something grotty that I like about I liked about the old Eurostar. You know, because it wasn't as... Now it's quite glam, whereas before it was a sort of means to an end.
Yeah, fair. They finally repurposed those platforms, though, haven't they? Because they were closed for years.
Where do they go now?
They now are like the Southwest Rail line that goes out to like Putney and like Windsor and stuff, I think.
Right. And they exist in that sort of funny little bubbled...
Yeah, it's a separate awning.
You see it from the outside, from the roundabout.
From the big
way.
Roundabout, yeah. Yeah, it's like a separate awning. So that's sort of a good overview. We've got on up to the 90s.
It's a very good overview of the station. Shall we move on to Waterloo's buildings?
I mean, Waterloo's developing apace even now. Mm-hmm. There are so many new tall buildings that have been thrown up around the, you know, they kind of hem in the Shell building now, which is that beautiful old office for Shell.
Where is it?
Basically opposite the London Eye.
Yeah.
Overlooking Jubilee Gardens.
And was it built as the Shell building?
Yeah. Built for Shell, by Shell. And I suppose actually, well, let's not stop if we're there. Obviously at the Millennium, we saw a very now considered iconic structure go up by the river there, the London Eye, or as it was known then, the Millennium Wheel.
It still is in many of our hearts.
It's like, I think it's like the lastminute.com wheel Millennium now. Wheel.
Is it?
Yeah, it's gone through so many sponsors, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it the Barclays Wheel?
It was like Coca-Cola for a bit, and it was like BA for a bit.
It was the Coca-Cola Millennium Wheel.
It's the Coca-Cola Eye?
Ooh, that's a sort of sinister capitalist.
Like Sauron. And it was BA. BA had it for a long time, which made sense. That was like the sensible sponsorship. It was like, oh, it's like it's flying, it's in the air, like, and it's British. Coca-Cola, not so much.
Yeah, but, you know, it was the Coca-Cola Cup.
Yeah, gets you flying.
Yeah, sure. Just enjoy a Coca-Cola while you're...
Not paying us for this?
Yeah. You're not getting paid by Coca-Cola. Why do you think I'm wearing all these clothes? All these red clothes, mate.
Yeah, to be fair, that
I'm dressed as Santa for Christmas.
That cat was a bit conspicuous. I did wonder why. And why you kept saying enjoy every time I walked in.
Ah, enjoy.
Come in, enjoy.
Always.
Coca-Cola. Anyway, this podcast is not sponsored.
Mate,
by...
you're drinking. You're, no joke. You're literally drinking a Coca-Cola as we speak.
Delicious.
We're going to take a short break. Back after these messages. Coca-Cola.
There we are by the river in Waterloo. That was Millennium. I suppose maybe you mentioned the County Hall.
Yeah.
So County Hall was the home of the London County Council, who administered the city for 800, I don't know, for a bit.
The LCC.
LCC. And that was their home.
A really excellent example of fantastic use of a listed building in the beautiful old County Hall, because it's now the scene of Shrek's Adventure.
Shrek's Adventure, yeah, thank God.
Yeah, where you can buy a green hot dog for £22.
Thank God they're keeping the lights on.
Yeah. The less said about that, the better.
Donkey. It also famously houses the London Aquarium. Or underneath, I guess, is the London Aquarium.
Yeah.
And the London Dungeons have a pitch, yeah, there too.
They've moved there.
And Shrek.
And also there is a long running Agatha Christie that takes place in one of
the council chamber, which is called
Witness for the Prosecution.
And that feels like a fit for purpose repurposing, doesn't it? Shrek's Adventure. Don't know what they're doing with that.
No.
I'm kind of intrigued, actually.
I'm not. So before you ask me, do you want to go down Shrek's Adventure? I'm good.
I would just have a stickers.
Great.
Is it Shrek's Adventure?
Is that where we're going?
Yeah.
Can we not go to the London Dungeon instead?
Can we meet in the middle on the aquarium?
I would happily do that. No, right. I haven't been since I was a wee lad.
I don't think I have either, but I've always enjoyed it.
So we're on the South Bank. It's a lovely day. We've been to Shrek's Adventure, or not. We've been to the London Aquarium. We've been talking about some of the more recent attractions, but let's talk about the history of the South Bank as we know it. How did it all come about, London's iconic South Bank?
So the South Bank as we know it today is, if you can imagine this, a sort of ghostly fairground.
Okay.
It is the fairground for what once was the Festival of Britain.
Of course.
Which was a festival that happened in 1951 to commemorate the centenary or the 100-year anniversary of the Great Exhibition that happened in Hyde Park in the Crystal Palace. A sort of high point of Victorian British Empire imperialism.
Right.
So in 1951, after the Second World War, looking for a slightly more modern, forward-looking occasion, the government...
Less empire-focused.
Less empire-y, yeah. A bit more sort of modernist. The government, then Labour government, commissioned the Festival of Britain and built on the South Bank, on a previously bombed-out barren site.
Which had been ammunition factories?
I think there was once one there, yes. I'm not sure if that's what they bombed. That goes all the way back to like the Crimean War, I think.
We digress.
So they built this festival site, which included the Royal Festival Hall.
As the jewel in the crown.
Still see it today.
The only one remaining?
The last remaining structure. They also built the Dome of Discovery, which was a sort of, dome structure.
Do we think the Millennium Dome was a nod to that?
I think there might be a legacy there, you know.
We speculate.
Yeah. And that was dedicated to technology and science. Other than that, it sort of spread down the Thames, but still all on the south bank of the Thames.
Went to Battersea, didn't it?
Yeah, to Battersea. You had the pleasure gardens. You could access it via the Thames. There were piers at all these sites. And then if you went the other way, east, to Poplar, you went to what was the architecture exhibition, which was basically a sort of like modern development. It's still there. It's the Lansbury Estate, I think.
We'll worry about it when we get to Poplar.
Yes. And if you come back to the South Bank, there were a few other quirky little structures there as well. They had this funny, mad thing called the Skylon, which was this very distinctive cigar-shaped structure, as it's always described.
Why, though?
Why, though? It's a good question. Why, though? Just cause, bruv. It's a funny one, but it is. It was a bit of a marvel in that it was suspended with tensile cable, and it made it look like, if you blurred your eyes a bit, the cigar was just standing on its end, floating.
I think it was like sort of UFO vibes.
It was, I guess, considered a sort of feat of engineering, and it was just showing that, oh, look what we can do. It was really loved. Everyone thought it was really cool. It's not there anymore. You can still see the footprint of where it stood. If you walk from the London Eye to the South Bank, there is a little plaque on the floor, a little brass plaque that says, stood here, the Skylon. Its name is also commemorated in the nice grill restaurant in the Royal Festival Hall. It's called the Skylon.
Ah, there was a popular joke at the time that, like the British economy of 1951, it had no visible means of support.
Day!
Ba-dum-bum.
I love it.
What about the flagpole?
The best flagpole in London.
Can I get a flagpole?
You can. You can get one from the people of British Columbia.
I'd love one, thank you.
Guess how they'll give it to you?
Hewn out of one massive tree.
Yes, you are indeed correct. Only the grandest flagpole that you could possibly have.
For those of you who are confused, we're talking about a big flagpole on the South Bank, which you actually might miss, believe it or not. But when you see it, you see it.
Yeah, and was gifted to the people of Britain as a big up for the Festival of Britain by British Columbia in Canada.
It's very impressive.
It's massive.
I can't imagine the actual flag that is needed to go on that thing.
So the Royal Festival Hall is the last remaining building that stands of that expo, although there are a lot of other very distinctive brutalist buildings around there, specifically part of what is now known as the South Bank Centre. You have obviously the Royal Festival Hall. There's also the Queen Elizabeth Hall, which I think was built in the late 60s, and the Hayward Gallery, which I don't know when it was built, but I guess around then.
It's almost like you didn't do the research for this one.
I got some stuff. And that's what's now known, yeah, as the South Bank Centre, and also houses the notable skate spot known as the Undercroft.
Yeah, it does. You've missed a couple of biggies.
Okay.
Namely the BFI.
But they're not... Are they part of the South Bank Centre? We had this debate, didn't we?
Yeah, we've had this... Yeah, are the BFI and the National Theatre...
So no.
National Theatre is obviously independent, but it's worth noting that we're talking about the South Bank here.
I was talking about South Bank Centre. You, however, should finish off the South Bank with the BFI and the National Theatre.
But before that...
By way of the Undercroft.
By way of the Undercroft. So we're walking along it now.
Yeah, we are.
And so we've stopped to look at the skate park.
Yeah.
Where I've seen many people injure themselves.
Yeah. It's a lot of embarrassing moments.
Some good ones.
But also some really rock and roll ones.
Yeah.
It's a very cool space. Apparently people have been skating there since the 70s.
Love it.
So it's been a skate spot for a long old time. You know, they tried to close it.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they tried to develop it. Some bloody developers were trying to get rid.
And the skaters staged a protest.
And the skaters staged a protest. It was a big protest movement called Long Live South Bank, I think. And in a similar sort of way of like cultural protection that happened, like when they tried to close Fabric and there was the big Save Fabric movement, like there was a real sort of national and even international level sort of rallying cry to stop them fucking with a piece of, you know, cultural history in the city, which was an amazing thing.
Almost subculture.
It is subculture. It's not high culture, and that's why
they're trying to erase subculture.
And like people have to mobilize to stop that, because if it's not a fucking, you know, concert hall, then it's not considered to matter, and that's why the people got to speak.
You've kind of encapsulated the South Bank's charm there, because you've got high culture and subculture existing there, and it's why it's so popular with Londoners. You know, South Bank is one of those places that, yes, it's touristy, but also lots of Londoners love it as well.
Yeah.
So we're walking past the skaters. Yeah. Then under the bridge, you've got that quirky bookstall that's always there selling books that you didn't know that you needed and wanted, but you've just bought seven anyway. You've got like Barbara Streisand's second husband's autobiography and you're chuffed about it.
Butted up alongside Wordsworth.
Yeah, exactly. And just there is the BFI, mm-hmm. the British Film Institute, which is, I love it. It's so reasonably priced. They show classic films and they do film programs and everybody loves the BFI. And then you get to the National Theatre, which I think was finished in 1976. There are three theatres in the National. The clue's in the name. It's the UK's National Theatre. No, I suppose it's England's National Theatre because I think Scotland has one and Wales has one.
Oh, is it?
But the National actually was born out of the Old Vic, which is another theatre in Waterloo, nearer the station, set back from the river. Mm. And yeah, it's worth mentioning the Old Vic because it's a theatrical mainstay on London's theatre scene. There's been a theatre there since 1818. Mm. And the presence of the National, the Old Vic, and also the Young Vic on the Cut, plus the BFI and the IMAX, is a sort of continuation of Waterloo's legacy as a cultural hub of theatre and entertainment. The area would have been in the 19th century scattered with music halls as well. And there was a famous music hall near a Westminster Bridge Road called the Canterbury. So I feel like the fact that three of London's most important theatres plus the BFI sort of uphold Waterloo's
theatrical identity.
Thank you. So I took us away from the river in going to the Old Vic. Mm. And actually we've jumped over quite an interesting little area of Waterloo. Around Rupel Street.
Yes.
Tell us more about it.
It's a beautiful little residential enclave.
It properly is a slice of old London.
Yes, it is. A really uniform set of Victorian cottages and row upon row around about, kind of crisscrossing about like four or five different streets. All of them consistent in style and form. If you want to, yeah, like a little flavour of like London and how it felt maybe 100 years ago, I don't think you can do better.
It's a timepiece.
Yeah, it really is. And it's been used in lots of films and all the rest of it as a result, hasn't it, as a backdrop.
How did it come about?
So it was originally owned and administered as an estate by the Rupel family, hence the name of the street. It was Halfpenny Hatch before that, which was a cut through the fields, which you had to pay a halfpenny.
Halfpenny. So this is a reference to the fact that the area all around this was...
Fields. Yeah.
And actually at the King's Arms pub, which is a fantastic pub that we'll talk about later, which sits on Rupel Street. I read somewhere that there was an advert in a local paper that went up saying that they were selling the field opposite the King's Arms pub, which had 200 yew trees on it.
Wow. What once was?
What once was marshy agriculture. Grotty, you might say.
So Rupel Street was, the Rupel family who owned it have quite an interesting, rather checkered history, which I would encourage people to go and have a look at.
Give it to us in a nutshell.
So Mr. Rupel, the industrialist who owned it, had a son who had a bunch of illegitimate children, and one of the illegitimate children conned the will to be able to gain lots of stuff and became an MP. And then he was found out and he was sentenced to penal servitude in Australia.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the short version.
This sounds good. We should write a series about this.
It's pretty juicy.
I am going to go and check that out.
So that's the history of the Rupel family.
And so John.
John being the
dad.
Father Rupel, yes.
He bought this area.
He bought the area and developed it.
And it was workers' cottages for, I guess, work on the surrounding area. I don't know if it necessarily was related to the bridge and the station, but it might well have been.
I guess it was before. I think they actually started developing it after, in the early 19th century. So it could have been, yes, synonymous or linked.
Right. As we were saying earlier, you know, it really gives you a sense of old London. And it's fascinating that these houses are not, you know, you think of Georgian rows of houses, you think of quite grand houses for the rich, but these are rows of workers' cottages in which there would have been 20 people each in these two downs. All hanging out at the King's Arms.
Yeah.
And there's a funny little quirk about the fireplace plaques that you can still see, a very tangible piece of history.
Ah, yes.
On some of the houses.
For insurance purposes?
For insurance purposes, because there were a lot of fires in the area.
Yes.
Or there were fires when they were constructing.
There were fires. They had issues with fire when they were building them. There was a bucket of pitch caught fire one night.
I hate it when that happens.
I know. Every time.
Yeah. My pitch.
And as a result, they took out insurance, but some houses could and some couldn't.
Some of them had the fire insurance plaques, so the fire department would go in there and go, yep, we can put out the fire on that house. But unfortunately, the folk next door don't have the plaques, so...
I say that's surely is the opposite way you should be doing it.
Burn the rich.
You should let the ones who can get the insurance burn down.
The follies of insurance. But yeah, you can still see those. So that's Rupel Street and its surrounds.
Yeah.
Let's go down to the Cut.
All right.
Formerly New Cut.
So we've gone back towards the station, basically.
We've gone back, yes.
And
we've gone south.
And the Cut, which has the Old Vic and the Young Vic on it, and goes all the way up to sort of like Borough, right?
Yeah, on one end is sort of Southwark Borough,
yeah.
And then and then it crosses over into Lambeth Marsh. Lower Marsh.
Ah, I'm going to confuse that. There's a clue there.
Lambeth Marsh, Lower Marsh being, you know, a reference to the historical name of Waterloo.
Yes. And in the 19th century, the Cut and Lower Marsh were awash with market sellers, costermongers, as they were known, and was apparently a massive vibe.
Yeah, Henry Mayhew, who's a
famous social reformer.
He documented London life.
Yeah.
Extensively. And he talks about, you know, there being it rather than feeling like a market, feels more like a fair.
Mm.
This was every day.
Yeah.
And this market stretched all the way from Borough to Westminster Bridge Road. And this was that's a huge long market.
Yeah. Apparently up to 300 stalls.
Yeah.
And today, there's a sort of small nod to that history.
Well, yeah, more than a small nod. At lunchtimes, all the food markets set up along Lower Marsh.
Lower Marsh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's nice. That's a nice little nod.
Yeah.
Historic.
But they had to be closed down, didn't they?
Which ones?
The ones on the Cut had to be shut down for some reason, didn't they?
They changed the laws around you having a stall was what changed.
Okay.
And so apparently that meant that sellers became a bit more like, I don't know, itinerant, and it didn't feel quite as vibey anymore.
The vibe's gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they moved
lost
elsewhere.
Vibe.
Yeah. So it wasn't that they became a public menace.
I think that probably was why.
Back to crime.
Yeah.
Crime, bloody shut it down.
Victorians.
So we were over at Lower Marsh, and on Lower Marsh, just a word on Leake Street and the tunnels underneath there. Those you'll know if you know the area, you know. If you don't, come off Lower Marsh, turn down Leake Street, and you'll
which is a tunnel
that leads underneath the railway.
Yeah.
And you're
under the station.
The Leake Street arches, they're known as.
Yeah.
And they're covered in graffiti.
Yeah, I think tourists would know of it as like the graffiti tunnel.
Yeah.
But it's called Leake Street, which feels quite like an appropriate sort of onomatopoeic name.
Yeah.
Leaky.
You do such a disservice to this area.
The area done it to itself. That's not fair. So yeah, that's a sort of notable London destination. Can we talk about the Lonely House?
We can talk about the Lonely House. We're going back up to the roundabout where the IMAX is.
Yeah, we've zigzagged all over the shop, to be honest. I wish we could have led you a sensible route. But when you get up to the roundabout and the IMAX cinema, and if you're looking at the IMAX and you turn around and you look behind you, you'll see underneath the railway bridge there, or the sort of overpass, viaduct, whatever you call it, there's a little house, number 5. And
it sits alone.
It sits very much alone. That is number 5, formerly of Whichcote Street, the street that once existed, part of a row of terrace houses, rather fine ones, I'd imagine, based on how 5 looks. But you don't see 1, 2, 3, 4, because the whole thing was swept away by redevelopment of the area.
In order to build the roundabout.
Not in order to build the roundabout, I don't think. No. Apparently, after the war, I think it was more to do with the railway.
Right.
Actually.
So why did Five hang on in there?
I don't know. There's not actually, in the reading I did, there wasn't a sort of juicy, interesting story as to why Five was like, I'm not moving.
You want it to be an old geezer who's just like, no.
You do. But
if you knock it down, you're taking me with it.
Yeah. But there's no suggestion of that. Apparently, it's owned now by the landlords of the pub that it sort of like backs on.
The hole in the wall.
The hole in the wall, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's owned by them.
Okay.
But is, I guess has a tenant.
I feel like the last time I walked by it, there was a sort of knitting workshop advertised in the window.
Crocheting. The tenant, I believe, runs a crocheting and knitting business.
So head down there and in number five.
It's just a quirky little...
Must be quite hard to sleep in that house.
Dude, the railway goes overhead, the tube goes underneath.
And you're on a roundabout.
With the bus shelter right next to it. Yeah, and a bus shelter literally outside.
But what you are not lacking in is transport links.
No.
When you see it on Rightmove, it might come up as like most well-connected
house in London. London. It's just waiting for a Boris bike rank outside.
There is one.
Is it?
Yeah.
So that's the solitary house, number five.
Whilst we're on the roundabout, it's A, worth mentioning the BFI IMAX.
Big, big cinema.
Probably London's biggest, right?
It must be.
I mean, I don't know, but it's there. Anything to say about that?
I once saw a 3D film there when I was about 10 years old.
Of the Egyptians?
No.
Or the aquatic one.
It was underwater.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah.
Iconic.
Pretty mental back then in 2000.
I don't know what else to say about the BFI IMAX other than it's the IMAX.
It's a big telly.
Big booking telly on roundabout. Whilst we're on the roundabout, you know, there's a very picturesque and rather imposing red brick building which has written on it the Royal Waterloo Hospital for Women and Children.
Yeah, I know the one.
That's because that's what it was once upon a time. It was founded in 1816. I find it so interesting, this building. It has a very fascinating but very dark history. To put it in a nutshell, in the 60s and 70s, the building became the home of the infamous Ward 5, and in particular, the Narcosis Room.
Does sound dark.
It was used for psychiatric inpatients. Highly controversial methods were used on them. I'm not going to go into it. It's the stuff of horror films, so if you're into that kind of thing, look it up. But it's fascinating. The hospital closed in 76, and it now houses American university students.
Ah.
So there you go.
Cozy.
I wonder if they know about its dark past.
I wonder, yeah. Ollie, quick, duck. Woo! Watch out. It's a blue plaque attack.
We just lost so many friends. And maybe a wife.
I thought it was a good segue.
Are you okay?
I'm fine. I think I'm okay. Quick, read it out, that blue plaque that just attacked us.
Tell me about blue plaques in Waterloo.
There aren't many.
What have you got?
I've got the pending application for the ladies' bridge.
Yeah, so there's that we discussed.
Yeah.
There's the circus guy.
The circus guy.
Tell us about the circus guy.
So let's talk. Yeah, actually, that's a good one. That's a really good one. So the Astley's, I believe.
Astley's Circus, yeah.
Yeah. In 1768. Philip and Patty Astley staged a horsemanship show. He was a cavalryman, and he showed off his skills with his wife, who was also a very accomplished rider. And not only did they do a horsemanship display, but they also invited clowns and other entertainment performers to perform in the area around Rupel Street, where that now stands. And that was considered, with the mixture of horse show and clowns and entertainment, to be the first ever circus.
Right, so the circus was born in Waterloo.
Yes.
And the plaque is on Cornwall Road, yeah, which is near Rupel Street, as we've been discussing.
Mm.
There we are.
The father of the circus.
The father of the circus.
I think they still do bits and bobs to commemorate that on in that little...
Yeah, I think there's a sort of Waterloo Festival or Carnival.
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of hijinks.
Thank God for him. Where would we be without the circus?
Bored.
You know? What would you... I don't know what you, I would do on a Saturday.
I have no idea. We're doing this, mate. This fucking circus. Yeah, so I actually That's don't have it. Any other blue plaques.
Okay, let's...
But I do have something interesting. I have a monument.
Okay, nice. That's we can probably do that.
Yeah, yeah. I've got the National Windrush Monument, which was erected in 2022 to commemorate the Windrush generation. And artist Basil Watson said that the monument celebrates the Windrush generation's ambition, courage and contribution to Britain. And Waterloo Station was chosen because thousands of Caribbean people arrived there from Southampton before being dispersed or dispersing themselves around Britain.
Gotcha.
So that stands in Waterloo Station.
Yeah, I know the one. It's just as you come through the Triumphal Arch, I think.
Yeah, and they're dressed in their Sunday best, I think.
Ah, nice. That's a recent one. That's a good one.
Yeah. Do you know anything about the clock?
I know that it's the place that you meet people if you're going to Waterloo. Where are you going to meet? Obviously under the clock.
It's where lovers meet.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Do you...
I met my lover there.
Del Boy meets his lover there in Only Fools and Horses.
Does he?
Yeah, he does.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Is there anything more to it?
No, that was a brief attack.
A brief attack.
We survived. Wow.
All right, so let's move on then.
Nicely in culture, segue. Populaire.
Culture populaire. What is Waterloo? Where does it appear?
Oh, mate, where doesn't it appear?
Yeah, so true.
But I'll start... Well, I've got sort of some chronological order to mine.
Okay.
Dickens wrote about Waterloo Bridge a lot in his essay Down with the Tide, which is his brilliant account of spending time with, like, the underneath the bridges and with the toll keepers, and it's like his sort of paean to the Thames. Cool. And in it, Waterloo Bridge actually was quite notable in the 19th century for suicides. So there's that element to the story. You know, it's Dickens after all. But yeah, he spends time with the humorous Water. He just calls him Waterloo, but he's the like Waterloo Bridge keeper.
Oh, cool. I've not read nearly enough Dickens.
Don't admit that.
I know. It's
you do a London history podcast, mate.
It's embarrassing, isn't
no
it?
No one has. Honestly, if you want an entry into Dickens, read Down with the Tide. As a Londoner, you can totally get on board with it.
I will.
On board being the operative.
Hey.
Yeah, I didn't even realise I did it. God, I'm losing friends by the minute here.
Okay, so that's Dickens and Waterloo. What else? Other popular...
I mean, the Kinks song.
Yes, so we started with...
Waterloo Sunset.
Yeah.
And apparently it was originally written about Liverpool.
Hey!
You know this, right?
Yeah. Liverpool Sunset is going to be
Liverpool
cool,
Sunset, but the Beatles released... what was it? Penny Lane.
Penny Lane.
So Ray Davies went, shit. So
Ray Davies went, I can't talk about Liverpool as well. That'll be... I wonder if it was him or if it was the record label being like, there's already a big pop hit about Liverpool calling out Liverpool as a place.
But Liverpool's loss was our gain.
Yes, it was. Apparently Ray Davies wrote Liverpool Sunset because he was obsessed with Liverpool and the Mersey beat.
Right.
And so he wrote it because he was like a big Liverpool, a Merseyphile.
But then when he reworked it, he sort of started thinking about the time that he spent in St. Thomas's Hospital.
Yes.
As a 13-year-old when he was really ill. And the nurses used to wheel him out onto the balcony and he'd watch the tumult of Waterloo below him.
Yeah.
And that's how the song was born.
Yeah, and he talks about other sort of prominent moments in his life that sort of centered on the area. And apparently that was, yeah, the inspiration, which is lovely.
Lovely stuff.
Great song as well.
Ah. The best.
Considered by many to be the sort of most seminal song of the swinging 60s.
Really?
Yeah.
The More so of... than a Rolling Stones tune?
Yeah, apparently. Apparently. 67 it came out and was considered to sort of be at the absolute zenith. And I guess the mood, the description, it all feels quite, you know, London-like. Yeah.
But it's actually Liverpool.
And you know, yeah. And you know, Damon Albarn loves it as well. So it's a goodie in my book.
So Waterloo as a filming location, we could be here for hours, but I mean, Rupel Street is used for the film about the Cray twins.
Bond,
in which
legend.
Tom Hardy plays every character. Yeah. legend. Yeah. It's used for Call the Midwife all the time because it's, you know, as we said, you know, if you want to feel like you're in 50s London, head down Rupel Street.
Yeah.
There's also some classic cars on there, which really heighten that experience. The bridge is used in the Michael Caine version of Alfie at the beginning and the end. Sherlock, the TV series, is filmed on the bridge. There are movies about the bridge. There's three movies called Waterloo Bridge. So Waterloo is very culturally popular. And we've mentioned Shrek's Adventure, so, you know.
Don't forget ABBA.
But I assumed they were singing about the battle.
They are.
Oh, right. You had me.
You know.
How does it go? Sing it to us.
You're talking about Voulez-Vous?
No, sing us Waterloo by ABBA.
No.
Waterloo. Some Waterloo.
And there goes the last friend. Just left.
Okay, so let's move on to food and restaurants in Waterloo. In your grotty little Waterloo. Do you have anything?
Oh, grotty little corner.
You'd suggest getting out of Waterloo, wouldn't you?
No, I definitely have something. The Royal Festival Hall food market, which is behind Royal Festival Hall, back end, is kind of administered by the South Bank Centre and is a really lovely food market.
That is a great shout. It's an excellent array of stuff.
Great food, drink.
It's not on every day.
No, I think it's only the weekends.
Yeah.
I don't know that for a fact. Do check.
Do check. On the subject of markets, obviously we've got the iconic Lower Marsh Market, where there's a plethora of world foods. It's more of a lunchtime spot.
Yeah.
Because they don't go in the evenings. There's also Marie's Cafe there, not a stall, which is an actual restaurant. A cafe.
Hole in the wall vibes,
though.
It's
quite diddy.
Stainy.
It's a sort of fusion of like Greasy Spoon and really good Thai.
Meets Thai food.
Yeah. As in not in the same dish, but they just do both really well.
Oh, I would not want to eat that butter.
Thai green sausage butter.
Should we go to the local?
Let's go to the local.
What's your local in Waterloo?
Look, I feel like we should just meet this.
Come right out and say it.
come right out and say it, because I know what Louis is thinking, and he's thinking what I'm thinking, is that we are both huge fans of the King's Arms in Rupel Street. It's one of our favourite pubs in London. Top five.
Top five. With a bullet.
Yeah, it's a real classic old school boozer.
It is.
It's got two sides to the bar, two entrances. Love that.
Yeah, central island bar that divides the pub up. And there's even a backs area where you can dine.
Yeah, there's a fantastic Thai restaurant operates out of the back of it.
Yeah, I've never eaten.
Oh, the Thai is really good.
I've never eaten.
So there's your, we were saving it, but there's your food fix. That's where you want
to
go.
Reason to go back.
The beer is excellent. The, you know, old photos of the area adorn the walls. The tables are comfy. It's wood paneled. And the tables are comfy. When I sit on the tables, they're comfy too.
When you're dancing on the tables. And it sits at the centre of that historic little nexus of streets, which is a huge part of the charm, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's a sort of community pub in one of the coolest little communities in London.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah.
But there are other pubs in Waterloo. I just want to give a shout out to the Wellington, which is the huge pub over the road from the tube station exit from Waterloo. And it looks like a Wetherspoons, sounds like a Wetherspoons, smells like a Wetherspoons, but it isn't a Spoons. It sort of looks a bit rubbish, but it's actually a fine pub.
It's a decent pub. It's a great place if you need to have a quick half.
If you need to have one fast.
Yeah.
And obviously named after the Duke. There's the Windmill on the Cut.
I like the Windmill. Good pub. They got good beer too.
Pub. Good beer.
Summary.
So I've got one more. There's a little cocktail bar in the BFI, which you have to go find the little staircase that goes upstairs, because that's what staircases do. This podcast
well,
is
you do on them.
So illuminating. And you'll find a smaller bar, and they do lovely cocktails, and you're right underneath Waterloo Bridge, and it's a great spot. It's cozy.
Cool. Oh, I do know it. Sorry, I mean, oh yes, I know it. I've been there.
Yeah?
It's great. Yeah, it's really cool.
You obviously
cool.
had such a good time there that...
I remember it now.
It's all a bit hazy.
So, Lost Rivers? Any?
Okay, look.
Oh?
I'm really...
Where's the river? You got a river?
Stop it. I'm willing to be told I'm wrong, but I just could find no evidence of a lost river that runs through Waterloo.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But maybe because it's an area of low-lying land with a ton of streams and ditches and marshy ground. So the whole area is a lost marsh.
Oh, look, that's nice.
Alrighty, that about wraps it up for Waterloo. Louis, do you have a quote or a quirk or a secret to leave us with?
I've got a secret.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Pray tell.
It's a secret crane.
Okay. the bird or?
No, like the industrial winching device. There is at the back of Waterloo Station, if you're on like Lower Marsh, and you're looking up at the station from there, there's a little crane that is used to recover or winch carriages from the Waterloo and City Line tube up above ground so they can be serviced and maintenanced. And that's relevant because there is no outlet to the Waterloo and City Line. It is a wholly underground line. And the only line on the London Underground that goes from one station to one other station. Back and forth. All day long. Pretty cool, huh?
That's a fabulous secret.
Isn't it very specific?
Well, there you go. When you have a look at that crane, you'll know what it does.
Yeah.
And the secret has been uncovered.
Yeah.
I will leave us with... Why don't I leave us with the lyrics of the Kinks' London anthem? As long as I gaze on Waterloo sunset, I am in paradise.
That's lovely.
Thank you. Goodbye, dear friends.
Goodbye for now.